Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Hi, folks. I'm Larry Port. This is the Dream Job Cafe podcast, and I'm here with Jared Correa, who is the CEO of Red Cave Legal Consulting, and he's going to talk to us about his experience in the legal industry and the variety of roles he's been in. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I know, I can tell. So anyhow, let's just dive right in. So you're in college, and tell me a little bit about, like, as the Jared in college, like what you were thinking that you wanted to do and how you ended up doing what you're doing at Red Cave Legal.
Oh, if we go back to college, I was probably obscenely drunk sometimes.
Okay. All right. Some of our people can identify with that.
So I went to a small liberal arts college.
Oh, which one?
And it's called St. Anselm in New Hampshire.
All right, great.
I'm not like super religious, but I went to the school because they gave me a boatload of money. Like was on full scholarship, but like I had no idea what I wanted to do. In college, I was a complete moron. I knew nothing. Like I got out of high school. I'm like, oh, they made me an offer. I'll go be, you know, spin a wheel, an English major because I like to read.
Okay. All right. I'm guessing that a lot of people that were in the like legal industry, it just seemed to me they were like English, poli-sci, history, like avoiding basically math at every turn.
Ton of English majors in the legal community. I have not seen a math major attorney unless they're like an IP attorney where you actually need to know that stuff. But I was also like, let me double down on useless degrees and I will also become a classics minor as well.
Okay.
So that's what I did in college. And so the way I ended up in law school is I wanted to try debating. So I was on the debate team in college, which is like the nerdiest thing you could do. But we were like really good. Like we had a great team and we actually like were 1 point short of winning the national championship when I was a senior.
Wow. From a small college in New Hampshire. Yeah. That's great.
We were competing with like bigger schools, public universities, but we just had a really good team. And a lot of people I was on the team with, like, they've been really successful. So I learned to like write briefs and I learned to argue and I learned to think on my feet. And so I graduated from college and I was like, I have no idea what I want to do. Like, I'm completely clueless. I'm like, I can talk, I can argue, I should be a lawyer.
Okay.
So I just applied to law school. That was it. That was like the whole thought process.
Timing wise though, like when you, like, so you didn't do, cause you didn't know what you wanted to do. Did you start applying to law schools like senior year? Did you go to career fairs or none of that?
I was so late to the application process. It was definitely senior year. And by the time I started applying, you know, people would give me looks and they'd be like, little late for that. And I took the LSAT. It was very middling. Like, I didn't study for the LSAT. Don't do what I did.
Don't do what you did, but you ended up okay. See, I think that's important to hear, like, that you don't have to be completely on top of your game, that you can take your time and figure out what you want to do. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you've had a fruitful career and you're a happy guy. So at least it seems that way.
Yeah.
So
I was definitely not on top of my game. Decidedly so.
All right. So you go to what? So you apply to law school. Did you go directly in after senior year? Directly in?
I went right in. I didn't take a break. Because I wanted to just get started making money at some point. I was like, ultimately, like, I'd like to get paid to do stuff. So I wanted to get in as quickly as possible. Now, my law school choice came down to two schools, really. So I was like very heavily leaning towards Santa Clara in California for one reason. I had found out that the female to male ratio on campus was 15 to 1. And I was like, I'm very down. Jeez. But then I was like, I got a lot of friends in New England. Like, my family lives here. I don't know if I want to move all the way across the country to the West Coast.
Right.
So I decided to go to Suffolk Law School in Boston.
Excellent. Okay.
And yeah, that was that. So I basically took like, I don't know, whatever, like 2 months off, 3 months off, and then right into law school. Like, with no clue what that's going to look like. And then I learned about the Socratic method and I was like, dear God, what's happening?
Okay. So let me just ask you this. Who should not go to law school? For those, for the people that are out there, you've been through it and you did well. Who shouldn't go?
I should not have gone to law school, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Okay.
And
all right.
I think the reason for that is because I'm good at making quick decisions. Like, I'm very happy to make a decision, but I don't really love researching all that much. So I wasn't looking around and being like, oh, you know, I could go to law school and then do this. I had no thought of that whatsoever. Like, the thought process for me was basically like, oh, lawyers make some money. That seems to be a decent career. My other choice might be to get to be an English professor, but I know they don't make any money. So that was my entire thought process.
That was your entire thought process. Okay.
I probably should not have gone to law school. I might have been more successful doing other stuff, like stuff that I really enjoyed. My thing, so what I would tell people is like, if you want to go to law school, like take a look at what that career looks like, understand what lawyers do, talk to lawyers, maybe do a little shadowing. You don't want to go in and be like I did. Oh, this actually sucks. I don't like practicing law because that's what I found out, which is why I ended up having to pivot. And I was ready to pivot in law school, man. Like year two of law school, I was like, I've made a terrible mistake.
Wow. But year one is the one that is apparently really hard for people. Like that's my understanding of law school. I didn't go to law school. So,
I mean, I've never had an issue. So school was always easy for me. I have photographic memory. It's like really easy for me to take tests and stuff like that. So if I wanted to, I got straight A's and everything. So year one was not that hard. Like I didn't have a problem with it. But then year two, I was like, oh, now they're asking me to take electives. So it sounds like I need to choose to do something. And again, I'm like, oh, I don't like anything that's profitable. I'm like, I'm interested in constitutional law, but I don't want to be a trademark or patent attorney. I don't necessarily want to do any of this other stuff. And then I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Like, I don't know.
Well, that's, to be honest, I think a lot of people are not aware, at least in college. In fact, I didn't even know how many different types of law there were before I started Rocket Matter and I was dealing with lawyers all the time. I mean, you know, so there's the stuff that people probably know about. There's family law, which encompasses adoptions, divorces, all sorts of good and bad right. things for families. There's business law. There's helping people with contracts. There's helping people with deals. I mean, there's personal injury, the slip and fall guys that those are the ones that tend to advertise a lot and have a lot of money. There's maritime law. There's everything. Right. So
I know any of that.
And they all know that. Yeah, you didn't know any of that. But how, like, they all have kind of different characteristics. And then there's the mission-driven ones, right? Like, if
right.
those people are probably not even listening to this podcast because you meet these people that read To Kill a Mockingbird when they were 15 and all they want to do is become a criminal defense attorney. Or these consumer rights attorneys who, like, are the bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy attorneys who just want to stick it to the man, right?
Yes, right.
So
right.
can you talk a little bit about, like, how the variety there are and how different the actual life is for the yeah. practitioners?
I mean, if somebody has like a passion for any of those things, like that's a good candidate to go to law school. I think if somebody's like, hey, I want to stick it to the man and I want to do it in this way, that's great. Mm-hmm. Just to track back for one second, like my big problem was I wanted to be creative in my career. And I found that being a lawyer, like everything was precedent based. So everything mm-hmm. I needed to do was copying someone else. And I was just not interested in that. So as you said, there's like a million different ways to practice law. I have clients across all kinds of different disciplines. So if you're like a personal injury lawyer, for example, like you're basically scratching lottery tickets. You got to like hustle. You got to get the work in. And then if it's your own practice that you're running, you may have to wait like 2-3 years to see that work pay off when you get settlements, when you go to trial and win trial awards. So that's a job where if you wanted to be a PI attorney and grow that firm, like it's a lot of ramen for like 2-3 years before you can lock it in.
Right.
Whereas there are other practice areas like transactional practices, like estate planning, for example. You could be an estate planning attorney. You could really like set the hours. Like it's not a litigation based practice. So when the meetings happen, when the documents get drafted, like that's totally on you. You can set that up for whenever you want. So if you want to say that you are going to onboard a client and you'll deliver them an estate plan in 6 weeks, if that's what you want to do, you got a lot of flexibility there. So that's a great lifestyle practice because you're not getting called into court. You don't have to deal with judges. You don't have depositions, for example.
And that demographic is growing. Like, so, yes. So seniors is a huge demographic now and is only going to be one. If somebody was going into law school and they just wanted to have like a nice living and they weren't passionate about like either being in front of a courtroom or fighting the man, yeah. Estate planning is a great practice area.
I got to tell you, like, that for me personally, like I, like I said, like I did a little bit of this. I see lawyers doing it now. I would probably want to avoid the litigation work if I could, because your schedule is not yours. The courts are not necessarily viable in terms of modern technology. Everything is harder. The other attorneys can get real gnarly during a litigation matter. So that's, I do see a lot of attorneys drifting to like as much automation, as much transactional casework as they can. Like even if you're an immigration attorney or a bankruptcy attorney, like sometimes you have court stuff that you have to go to, but it's relatively limited. It's all forms based. And if I get the right software in place, I can generate documents pretty quick and I can kind of ramp up or down my client load as I want. And so there's more ability to have a lifestyle as a lawyer. Because the other option is like, if you're not running your own practice or working at a smaller firm, then you're just working at a big firm. And if you're willing to get ground to dust, basically, for 5 to 8 years, and you're good with that, and then you can go do what you want after the fact, like that's another model for people. But I feel like it's, when I was in law school, I was like, I don't want to give away my 20s to be working for a giant law firm and then come out and be pulverized.
So, okay, so there's a couple of things to unpack here. The first thing I want to point out is that a lot of people, when they are in college or they're or mid-career and they're like trying to plan their career, but it mostly happens to younger folks, is that they're consumed with, will the job satisfy this itch that I have, as opposed to what do I want my life to look like? So for example, when you're talking about these kind of, when you're talking about these kind of things, you know, a lot of people picture themselves like in front of a courtroom arguing a case. If that's the case, the person that I know that tried the most trials in the shortest amount of time was a medical malpractice defense attorney, right? So, and they were in the courtroom. They had like 50 trials by the time they were in their 40s. This is Randy. Yeah. Yipe. Okay.
Oh, so, yeah.
That you know, and I know as well. So I think that's like the first kind of takeaway and that I want young people especially to kind of think about, which is that like, it's not just the job. It's like what your entire life looks at and looks like and how the career fits into your job. Tell me a little bit about the big law stuff, because especially kids who kind of find themselves in like, imagine you're an elite student and you go to like a Harvard or one of these like super fancy colleges. And then you go to law school because you figure you're supposed to be a professional and that's what you're going to want to do. And you just kind of stumble through and you default to this career, which I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are unhappy. Like when we were at Rocket Matter, we did all these reports about like the level of depression and alcoholism in the legal profession.
Lawyers are so depressed.
Yeah. Why?
Oh, so let me just say something real quick about what you said previously, which is like, what am I? I'm like 47 now. I got two kids.
Life is over.
I run my own company. Yeah, I'm done. I run my own company. So like if I want to take like a Tuesday off, like if I want to pack it up at like 1 on a Tuesday, I can do that.
You're good.
And like, I wasn't thinking about that when I was in college. I was just like getting to the next beer bong. I had no idea that I wanted, that I was going to have a family, that I wanted to spend time with them. And you're right. Like, you're not thinking long-term about lifestyle, but the more you do, like that could be impactful in terms of what job you choose. So why are lawyers depressed? I think that one thing to be aware of is that lawyers don't make as much money as people think they do. Non-big firm division.
Okay. Like,
a lot of like small firm lawyers are struggling financially in significant ways. And part of that is related to the fact that a lot of people go to law school coming off of college with significant student loan debt. And if we're talking about things you're not thinking of on a go forward basis, you're just like charging stuff when you're in school and you come out, you got a high interest rate, you got a lot of student loans to pay off. That may not make it possible for you to buy a house. Like, it's funny. Like I talked to lawyers who I would assume at that point in their life would be settled. They'd have a house in the suburbs, 2.5 kids, nice car. And they're like, you know, my Toyota is 15 years old and I still live in an apartment and I hate my life. That's part of it. And then the other part of it, I think, is just like the work. So the work can be a real grind and it can be very repetitive. And every client is going to come to you as like, okay, This is the first time I've ever engaged in the legal process.
Yes. Actually. That was my
case. I have no clue. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have no clue what I'm doing. I'm so confused and scared. Like, help me. So everyone is like, it's almost like you're sitting on a boat and you've got a million buoys that you're throwing to people and you're trying to manage all this because everybody is in the scenario that they're like at the, it's like the most intense pressure they've ever felt in their life.
I can attest to that.
You're the repository for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the first time I got a cease and desist letter. It was the scariest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I took it to an attorney. Now I kind of like, haha, whatever. But when you first engage an attorney, I agree with you, you are freaked out. There's also I do think that people end up doing the work because they don't know what else they want to do sometimes. And I think that there is a certain mentality that you have to have, whether this is inherent to the person that goes into law school or whether it gets instructed to you during the case, there is a sort of a pessimism because if you're going to protect somebody in a contract, you kind of have to come up with a worst case scenario. So there's, in some ways, a lot of times attorneys are in the worst case scenario business.
And I think you're right. That also dovetails into their personal life because it's, you know how it is. Like if you got a job, like it's very easy for that to bleed over. As a consultant, like I know, so my wife has a travel business and I'll never forget this. So like one day she came up to me and she's like, here's the logo for my new travel business. And I started like dissecting it like a consultant would. And she's like, I don't remember asking for your opinion. I'm like, right. Oh, note taken. Thank you. But with lawyers, you're always like, oh, like what's the worst possible, what are the five worst possible things that could happen here? And what do I do with that? Mm-hmm. And like in your business, in your lifestyle, you're always like, okay, how is this going to fall apart? And that's a mental load too. Like, I just think lawyers carry massive mental loads all the time. And they are people who are perfectionists and they think they can handle everything. So they're like, I'm just going to tough it out. And then couple that with the fact that there's a lot of financial pressure. Like if you want to do something else, like good luck with a $2,000 a month loan payment. You know, what are you going to do? Open like a hot dog stand or something like that? It's impossible. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of them feel like they're trapped.
So I think one major takeaway here is that if you are considering going to law school, like you need to know why you're doing it. And you also should have a really good sense of what the work is like and the different types of practice areas that you would go into. Now, in your case, you pivoted to a legal adjacent career. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I totally lucked out. Don't be like me. Like I said, I didn't do any kind of research. I'm in law practice. So this is an interesting story. So when I was in law school, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I was like, I think the business part of this is more interesting to me. So I went to the career services at the law school and I was like, I don't think I want to practice law. I think I want to do like business consulting for lawyers because that's the part of it that's interesting to me. I think I've got chops to do that. And they said, you should probably think about finding a real job. So I was like, oh, I guess I should be a lawyer. So I put that to the side. I practiced law for about 5 years at small firms, mostly. I hated it. I remember like, you know, people don't think of this when they're in college, but I remember I was at a job and I didn't have enough to do and no one was assigning me anything and I didn't know what to do. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the gym for 3 hours a day. And I did that for like 3 months. I was like living at Gold's Gym and nobody even said anything. They weren't tracking billable hours. I was like, what is this? This is crazy. And so that's when I'm like, man, the business management stuff, like nobody's doing this right. So I decided at one point that I was like, all right, I'm deciding I'm not going to take another job as a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. I want to be done. So I applied for like legal jobs and not legal adjacent jobs. So I could just use the legal salary to try and leverage a better salary at a non-law firm job. So I applied to be like the publications manager at the State Bar Association in Massachusetts. And I got that job and I'm like, I'm taking it. Like salary's not great, but I'm going to do it, whatever. And I did that for a year. And then out of the blue, like the state of Massachusetts had started a free consulting program for lawyers. 60,000 lawyers in Massachusetts, they have a free business management consulting program. I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly what I want to do. So I applied for that job. I got it. And that's how I started doing the consulting thing. And I got lucky there too, because like I started doing consulting in like 2008, and two big things happened there. Like cloud software started.
Yeah, that was us. Europe. That's when we came out.
Yeah. And then there was social media, and I'm like, oh my God, I can like write and speak and I can publish it everywhere. And I was an early adopter into social media. I started a podcast in 2009. I'm basically like, I'm just jumping in and creating a profile for myself, but it was the right time to do it. So like I said, like, I think there's, this is not like me planning to have a career. It was more like me falling upward constantly.
Okay. No, but that's, I think it's very important for people to hear that. Cause also like you point out something like some of it is timing, some of it is it luck. Is. Like the fact that you entered at that time and, you know, the social media entered at that time, same thing happened with us really with my business. Yeah. That would just, it just happened to be the right place at the right time. But there's so many, I would say for people, there's so many different things going on in society and constant change and so on and so forth. Those moments aren't as rare as you might think they would be. It's not, you know, you just have to pay attention and figure out what they are. So like right now there's this huge thing going on with AI. And that leads me to another question is that, tell me, what's the legal profession like right now as AI is coming? What are people talking about? What do they think is going to happen in 5 or 10 years? Because I would think that what the transforming engines are really good at is, you know, document analysis and generation, which is what attorneys do for a large part.
Yes. I would say that lawyers are highly skeptical of AI, as is their want. That's they're skeptical of everything.
Yeah, they are.
And they're also like concerned about the confidentiality of data issues. Mm-hmm. So very few lawyers are actually using AI. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with lawyers about like, have you tried this? And they're like, no. And we're like 2 years out, 2.5 years out from the launch of ChatGPT when all this stuff blew up. I had a lawyer I was talking to the other day who was telling me like, oh, I'm using the AI, which is like, that's like
Facebook.
How you know, right? I'm like, oh, I've heard this before. And he's, I'm like, how are you using the AI? Like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm doing Google search. I'm using the AI. And like, we talked for about 20 minutes around and around. And I was finally like, look, man, can you share your screen and show me what you're doing? And he was like reading the AI overviews in Google. And I was like, okay, tab over 3 to the left and you can talk to the AI. And he's like, oh my God, I can have a conversation. So it's going like that for most lawyers.
Not shocking. But, okay. Based on my experience with slow adoption in the industry.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I would to your question about like, what do they feel like is going to happen in 5 to 10 years? Like my feeling is that like a lot of the lawyer job, a lot of the legal assistant jobs, paralegal, admin, a lot of that's going to be replaced by technology. And lawyers do not think that's going to happen at all. Every lawyer I talk to is like, I'm better than the technology. The technology cannot do what I do. And I was like, well, it can do like 90% of what you can do probably right now. And it's only going to improve. So they are completely unaware for the most part.
Well, so for example, I got to see estate planning up close in my software capacity. And it's like one of the things that estate planning attorneys do is they say, okay, let me see your old wills. And they get the old wills and then they have somebody go through and they pull out who the beneficiaries are. Now you can add that to ChatGPT and say, who are the beneficiaries of this will and tell me how it's supposed to flow. So, you know, I do see potential there, especially for the more routine office work. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Like, well, what I tell as a consultant, what I tell law firms is like, I want you to have the most efficient team possible. So if you've got like 3 employees now, let's try to make that team as efficient as possible using like their skills, but also utilizing the right technology, non-AI division, and then also using AI. And let's see how far we can get before we need to hire somebody else. Because I think the other thing is, I don't think this is germane to just lawyers, but all business owners, like they're not looking to fire people. Like, it's not like people who own businesses are heartless, but they're like, hey, if I can cap the number of people I have right now, people are expensive, technology is cheaper. Can I start to deploy this more effectively?
Yeah. Jeff Bezos may disagree with you on this. He's like planning on laying off something like 30,000 people.
But, yeah.
But the smaller businesses, yes. And I do think that the tools available to them will help them. So it sounds like if somebody is thinking about a legal career, it sounds like, and I'll just kind of sum up, they might want to, A, explore what the work is actually like, right? In a variety of different things. Don't think that you, just because right. you talk to a criminal defense attorney that you talk to a lawyer, right? Because there are as many lawyers as there are crayons. I'm not sure. There's a lot.
Saying I spoke to a lawyer and I figured out what I'm going to do is kind of like saying I spoke to an athlete and I figured out what I was going to do. Like all the sports are different. It's the same thing with law firm practice areas.
Right. Another thing is, it sounds like, I don't know, I would encourage people, if they're going to go to law school, take a look around at the law school and make sure they're doing things that incorporate modern technology and some business practices. Because when I was running Rocket yes. Matter, my company served small law firms, people with like 10 attorneys or fewer. And it seemed to me like very few of them had any business education at all. So, and I think that's extremely detrimental considering how much debt the people go into that go to law school.
Yeah, especially because a lot of lawyers end up starting their own businesses.
Yeah.
But there's so many small firms and solo attorneys in the United States. Yeah. I think law schools are doing a better job of that, but there's also still some reticence on that front as well. And with respect to the AI, that's even more problematic. I have some law students I was talking to the other day who are like, our professors forbid us from using AI, which I think is just insane, frankly.
There's on the flip side though, like what, I don't know where Dan Lear is still. Is he at Michigan State? Or it seemed like they were doing interesting things up at Michigan State and some of the law schools.
Dan Lina?
I don't remember. Some guy named
Dan. Dan Lina. Yeah, Dan
Lina. Kind of looked like me, but he had like a pompadour. In any case,
he's like, I don't remember what that looks like. He is, I think he's in Michigan State still. I could be lying though.
So, but I would look for and I know my friend Dave Maxfield, who wrote the book with me, he's doing some interesting things at University of South Carolina Law. So it really does help to look around at the law schools, make sure that they're teaching you things that are maybe thinking a little bit forward. Being able to be familiar, obviously, with the AI tools, I think is certainly going to help. And understanding that a lot of routine white collar work in general is going away. So if a lot of that does go away, then what more opportunities will there be? What will be left for the attorneys to work on?
If I'm a lawyer, like I'm doing this is super broad, obviously, not earth shattering, but I'm doing like the most high end, personally engaging work. Like I want to be like a sought after advisor and counselor rather than like a document drafter. So I'm focused on strategy, high end strategy. In whatever business I'm in. So like if I'm somebody who's doing estate planning, we talked about that before. I want to be able to use a software that just cranks out the documents. I want to be I want to meet the clients who are like, hey, I'm not going to do a will at Staples. I'm willing to talk to somebody and I want to shell out money to do that because I want to have somebody I can ask my questions to. Like there are still a lot of consumers like that. And then I'm charging a flat fee, value-based billing rather than hourly billing. That's what I'm looking at, generally speaking. And then I guess the other thing I would say is like on the notion of like doing legal adjacent work, like if you're a law firm, like you can be a lawyer and not do a law firm. You can create a legal software company if you wanted to.
Plenty That's
of
true.
People have done it. Uh-huh. You could do document production. You could do a whole host of things. I'm talking with someone right now who did that very thing. So I think there's going to be more work kind of in the legal technology space moving forward than there is going to be work in the law. Like I think the law firm, the traditional law firm work is going to reduce and there's going to be more need for legal technology. So I would think about getting into that if I was an attorney.
Gotcha. I think the moral of the story for anybody in any career is like the better you are with human to human interaction, and the better you are with like persuasion and communication skills, and it's going to really help you in a world where the routine is going to become, you know, automated, and also a lot of technology awareness. I think both of those skills can help you no matter what you go into. Would you agree?
I guess the way I look at this, like I'm just thinking about this from a college perspective. If I was like a junior in college right now, and I was thinking of going to law school, the things I would want to be really good at are sales, customer service, and then prompting AI and getting to my answer as quickly as possible. I think that fits in the legal practice on a go forward basis. Like those are, I think, going to be the most important skills. And two of those are soft skills.
Well, Jared, this is a great conversation. Any last words? I mean, that's a pretty good one to end on, but any words of wisdom that you want to leave people with?
Yeah, I agree that Billy Joel's The Stranger is almost a perfect album, except for the last two songs.
That's great. How do you feel about Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever?
Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever is a perfect album. Now I'm jumping onto my podcast stuff. I'm going to do Full Moon Fever. I'm going to do a full retrospective on it. Amazing album. But then you need to get away from Jeff Lynne a little bit, because I think we hit peak Jeff Lynne on Full Moon Fever.
Well, have me on. Would be happy to talk about perfect albums. In any case, thank you so much for being with us today, Jared. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And good luck finding your dream job.